Welcome to the Making the List podcast with Alyssa Dare Nelson. If you want to learn the secrets to build a successful, sustainable, fast-growing business, this is the podcast for you. Each week, you'll hear incredible stories and get actionable tips and advice from CEOs who've led their companies to the Inc. 5000. Do you want to join them in making the list? Then let's go. And now, here's Alyssa Dare Nelson.
Hey there, and welcome to the fifth episode of the very first season of Making the List. I'm your host, Alyssa Dare Nelson, and I'm thrilled that you've decided to join us today. Our guest today is Christy Peel. Christy Peel launched Media Minefield in 2010 following a 12-year career as an Emmy Award-winning television news reporter. With clients ranging from startups to billion-dollar brands, Media Minefield is a one-of-a-kind agency specializing in earned media and messaging. Christy was named the 2019 Women in Business honoree by the Minneapolis-St. Paul Business Journal. She studied professional writing and graduated with honors from Bethel University right here in the Twin Cities. In 2015, Bethel named her the Alumna of the Year. Christy is a founding member of DePaul University's Women in Entrepreneurship Institute and a member of Women Presidents Organization. This episode is fantastic, and I'm excited to share the gold nuggets that come out in our conversation today. Christy talks about some of the things that have really guided her to success, things like how her personal non-negotiables guided her business model, how her commitment to open learning saved her from lots of mistakes, and how questioning the status quo for what corporate America has done has helped her to create an amazing culture that she loves, but more importantly, that her employees love as well. So without further ado, let's jump in. Christy, oh my goodness, it is such an honor. Thank you so much for taking the time out and spending time with us here on Making the List.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, this is going to be really exciting. So, you know, you started out in media and specifically in earned media. And I know when I started doing segments on the news and things like that, I really didn't understand the difference between earned media and owned media and bought media. So can you, first of all, before we even dive into your story, would you explain to us the difference between all the different types of media out there?
Sure. And you said it well, there's three different kinds: earned, owned, and paid is how a lot of folks think about it. And we really focus in the earned side. So what that means is that any news coverage that our clients are getting, it's because there's no sales team involved. There's no money being exchanged. Our client is an expert in something. They have a legitimate story to tell. Therefore, they're getting media, whether it be on a podcast or a newspaper, television, national, local, whatever it might be. So that's earned media. Paid media would be, okay, I want to buy a commercial, and so I'm going to contact the sales department, or I'm going to put a billboard up. That's, you pay for that spot. And then owned media, a lot of companies are putting out their own content, or they're producing videos on their own. They own that, they created it, and they're putting it out on their own channels.
Yeah. So for instance, this podcast, I'm the host. This is my owned media. So under my own volition, I'm putting this out, and we're able to get this on the air and get it out into the ether lands all on our own. Christy, of course, is here on earned media. She earned the right to be on here and to be highlighted because of her accomplishments, because of her expertise, et cetera. So, and there's no exchange of money involved here. So no paid media whatsoever. No. This is what we do, earned media all day long.
That's right. Right.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about you and, you know, your journey. We know that an overnight success doesn't happen overnight. and you've put in a lot of years of work. So, you know, give us the short story of how you got to be right here. We've heard some of the accolades. We know Media Minefield was founded in 2010, but give us a little bit more.
Sure. So as you mentioned, I was a TV reporter. I was a TV reporter for 12 years. I'm a Minnesota girl. I was born and raised in Hutchinson and knew that I wanted to go into television news. So I ended up falling in love with a university that didn't have at the time a journalism program, but figured if I was, you know, going to and meant to be in television news as my dream was, then I could go to the school I wanted to and get into television news. So at Bethel, I became an English major and I did an internship at what is now Fox 9. And one of the reporters there told me, you know, you do not need to have a journalism degree and you don't need to know how to edit the video. What you need to do is be able to be a really solid writer. Mm-hmm. And if you can prove that you can differentiate yourself as a solid writer, then you can get jobs right out of school where perhaps people that have more traditional journalism degrees, what they're bringing to the table. And it worked out for me. You know, if I had fallen in love with a different school, I would have absolutely gone into a more traditional program. But so I have an English degree and started, I got my first, I had several internships and my first job was at KUIC in Mankato. And then I was a TV reporter at Kello and Sioux Falls, two different stations in Dayton, Ohio. And my dream was to come back and to be in Minneapolis on television. And I was an investigative reporter at KSTP. And it was, you know, I was living the dream, right? I did what I wanted to do. And yet I knew that there was a disconnect because that industry, I love it. I'm so grateful I got to do it. I'm grateful I still get to touch it. But when I was, you know, 23 years old in the industry, it's a different dynamic than when I'm a mother of two children and a tornado hits and I have to drop dinner and, you know, go cover that tornado. So I wasn't brave enough to ask the question, you know, what should I be doing at this point in my life? I was on this path of doing my dream and didn't stop to ask my 35-year-old self, you know, if that was still the same dream and if it was still right for my family. And then I got the hardest and the best day of my life. I got called in and was laid off. And my entire investigative unit, we all lost our jobs. And so my last story at KSTP aired in the winter of 2009. And I took time off to soul search and asked some questions about what should I be doing with my life and who am I and what skills do I have? And it really, for me, came down to wanting to help people with my passion, which is storytelling, news, messaging. And I looked in traditional public relations, and whenever, as a reporter, I would interface with traditional public relations practitioners, and frankly, I hated it. They didn't get me as a reporter. They didn't have any background in news, so they didn't speak my language. And the concept of going and working for a public relations agency was very distasteful to me. So when I landed at, okay, I want to help people with my background, I didn't know that there was a home for me. I couldn't find one. So I did a lot of volunteer work. I took a very part-time role at my church, which got my head on kind of straight. News will mess with your head if you're in it for a long time because you really think that the whole world is burning down, being shot at, being robbed. You know, that's your everyday normal. And so I got my head back on straight and took a class at my church that was how to help people with your passion. Mm-hmm. And about week three in the class, I said, I'm starting a business. And I had the name and I had the concept. And I called my husband, who was in New York at the time. And I said, honey, I'm starting a company. And he said, great. And in the state of Minnesota, 30 days later, I was legal to do business. And that was in 2010. And wow. Here we are.
Wow, wow, wow. You know, it's so funny. I firmly believe that life happens for you and not to you. And you took that experience of being laid off. And, you know, there's always a grieving process. And I think it's important to recognize, because I tend to be a very, very, very positive person. And people are like, but, you know, like stuff sucks sometimes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's okay to stop and grieve that loss, but then start to look at, well, how might this serve me? How might this be actually a good thing? And how can I frame it? How can I make it be a good thing? And you totally did that in your situation. And, you know, kudos to you for taking the time to actually pause so that you could actually think about what could happen next or what might be next, because you could have just very easily gone, well, this is what I got to do. Maybe you work for a newspaper. Maybe you take your, I think in the Twin Cities, it's a year off in between stations and that kind of thing. I'm not sure if that's accurate or not, but you know, you could have found a job at another station or in another area, right? And instead you paused. And so how did you have the wisdom to do that? Or was it I don't know what I'm going to do, so I'm just going to stand right here. How did you wade through those hefty waters?
Sure. You know, initially what I now call, because I speak about this regularly, actually, and I call it my non-negotiables. I literally wrote down what my non-negotiables were, and I put them in three buckets, and it's must have, like to have, and hell no, and really clear about where my next step and I was not going to allow my career to dictate my life any longer. That was my, for sure, I knew that, you know, my family was going to come first and I was going to find my next gig in a way that it allowed my family and my children to come first. So my love to have really was about, I had to stay in Minnesota. Our family is here. We were settled. And the economy had just turned around. I mean, it was terrible at the time. And by turned around, I mean, it had dropped. And so moving wasn't an option. It wasn't the right time. So we knew right away that we were going to stay in Minnesota. And my like to have was I really wanted a healthy work environment, which should have been on the must have. But you know, newsrooms and news in general, it can be a rough place. And I wanted to find a healthy environment that supported my family. And my hell no was I was no longer going to allow someone else to dictate the future of my life and my family and have that come first, because I knew that my priorities were backwards. And I don't blame the industry. I don't blame any station. I don't blame my bosses. I made some choices that I was going to be very much identified by my career and what my business card said. And I knew that that was unhealthy and that that was going to change.
So good. So much wisdom in everything you just said there. These will all be in the show notes, ladies and gents. So you can go back and review that. Your non-negotiables list, I think, is so important whenever you're up against a really big decision, whether that's moving houses, whether it's hiring or bringing on a business partner, or whatever the case may be, a total career change. So Media Mindfield launched, and here you are in startup mode. Did you start all on your own, or did you partner right away out of the gate? And take us through how that first build of Media Mindfield went, because that can be a really scary time.
Yes. And I think had I known what I was building, I would have been petrified. But what I thought I was building was a safe mom job. And again, when I talk to people now, one of the things that I wish I could have done differently is I should have been thinking bigger right at the beginning. But it really was, I want to control my own destiny. I have an idea, because I knew that, you know, there wasn't a great process out there that could provide a client ongoing, consistent media coverage. There's a mindset in public relations often that you wait for the phone to ring and then you respond. And I believe that there was a way to get proactive, ongoing, regular media coverage for companies and people and thought leaders who had stories to tell. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to figure out how to do that. So the first year, I by myself figured out a process. We now have trademarked it. It's called Newsability, but it's step one is this, step two is this, step three is this, and then we can get people news coverage, which turned into, we have 100% placement rate. And so every client we've ever worked with, which this just tells you, like, I have the best team ever. They just crush it because I'm hiring folks out of newsrooms. So I really stayed in the passion area of how can we leverage media? How I understand news? How can I help other people understand it so that they can benefit their businesses? So that first year I gave work away. I discounted it heavily. I just got out there. And because I'm in the earned media space, I couldn't buy ads. So I didn't go out with a marketing campaign. I went out word of mouth, hustling. Hey, you're a really great nonprofit. You need your story told. Will you let me work on my business inside of your nonprofit? And that's how the business kind of got going. So my initial investment was $50, and I used that to print business cards. And my husband has a technical background, so he could launch a website. And it, again, 2010, so different world. And that was it. And one thing led to another. And the process of bringing this news-focused understanding, the media being passionate about that, and then bringing that knowledge to clients was so different. It really worked. And within a year, I was, you know, busier than I wanted to be, and I was able to hire someone. And I should say that it didn't happen. Well, I'm the owner. The idea was mine. I had a tribe of people around me who were really supportive. And I think had my husband said, You have an English degree. What are you doing starting a business? Or my friends had said, yeah, you don't know what you're doing. You should be staying at home with your kids. And it was a good friend of mine who now works at the company who is graphic designer and created the business card. And I paid her by taking her and her husband out for dinner. You know, these are the things that helped launch the company. Yeah. It was the right time and I had the right people around me yes. who believed in it. And that made all the difference because within a year I needed help. And that's when the concept of, okay, I can't do this alone, it was 12 months in is when it was bigger than I could handle by myself.
Oh, that's so good. And it is about the people you surround yourself with. It is absolutely true. It's not just cliche. You are the average of the five people you surround yourself with. If you surround yourself with people who don't believe in you, who doubt your every move and question, you know, to point out all the reasons it won't work, you're not going to be near successful. And, you know, I was just talking to a friend of mine about how, you know, she said, well, I used to work really well with that chip on my shoulder when someone told me I couldn't do it, that I would dig down harder and I would make it work. She was like, I just don't function like that anymore. And I was like, yeah, you know, we all in healthy environments don't function like that. And we can survive like that for a short period of time, but really surrounding yourself with a really good tribe is so vital. So here you are, year two. And maybe, you know, somewhere in there, you had a major bump in the road, as we all do. You know, we know that failure isn't probable on your way to success. It's absolute and it's a part of success. So what were some of the, if you can think about it, what was one of the biggest challenges that you faced? And could you have avoided that pothole altogether or even partially had someone like you in your current position told your former self back in, you know, 2011, 2012, 2013, or whenever the time might have been, and would have been able to avoid it?
I had people ask me this, so I've thought about it. And, you know, at the time, one of the really benefits of being a trained journalist and working with experts and asking them questions is that I knew that I didn't have all the answers. I wasn't sitting there with an MBA going, gal, I know the answers. I got to figure this out. So I was really comfortable asking for advice. And I'm just a natural learner. I read a lot. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I consume a lot of information. So I, even though I knew from Good to Great and The Flywheel and all these other things, like get really clear on your focus, I knew that in my brain. But I also knew that most agencies, I knew that I wanted to be a disruptor for sure, but I also knew that most agencies had a video production arm and a paid media production. Like they had these other things. So I thought, gosh, if I'm going to, you know, go and build this agency, then I need to have all these other arms. And that was a mistake because I tried things and then we had to shut them down. And, you know, we were always able to serve our clients in those areas well. And we didn't have any horror stories, but I think what it did is it slowed down the growth of what we do really well. And it wasn't until last year that we launched our second service line. And I think had I not been distracted by some of the other things we were trying, I could have launched, you know, the second service line inside this company sooner and been more clear about the focus and where we should stay. So I think that would have been my advice to myself is, you know, you want to be a disruptor. So why are you trying to build something other people have built? Do you and do it better than anyone else. And then other people will follow you. So I want to disrupt this industry and lead this industry and show businesses there's another way to leverage media, especially now with social media, and you can own your message. But I got distracted by some shiny objects.
Yeah.
And again, it wasn't catastrophic because I learned a lot and the business didn't shut down or anything like that. But it was distracting and difficult because there were people that were in jobs that we didn't have positions for any longer. So we didn't do any kind of layoffs, massive layoffs or anything like that, because of course I'm sensitive.
A little sensitive to the layoff thing.
Yeah, right. But it was a different structuring of the company.
Yeah. You know, I wonder too, if your humility and your willingness to learn, it has been one of the things that's helped you avoid catastrophic sorts of failures, because there is a humility about you and this openness and willingness to learn that that is game changing for entrepreneurs. And as you said, you know, I didn't have the MBA that, you know, gave me the extra ego. That's not exactly what you said, but I'm paraphrasing, but that you thought I should know all of these things. You didn't have that pretense. You thought, well, of course, I'm just human. So I'm going to go ask all the questions. And you grew up wanting to be a reporter. So clearly asking questions and learning is something that you've always loved to do. Yes?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the things, you know, you look back in your life and I believe that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing and I'm at the right place. And so that I go back and look at the things that were always there. And when I speak about it, I think about, and I show a slide of me when I'm like four, you know, I can go back to that little girl and see the seeds of what I'm doing now. Yeah. And, you know, get rid of all the noise before anyone said, you can't do this, or you shouldn't do this, or you're not educated enough, or you don't have what it takes. You go back to the seeds of childhood. And I have been asking questions and been interested in people's stories and believe that words have a lot of power my entire life. I started hustling and I was selling Avon in the high school locker room or middle school locker room because my friends started wearing lipstick and I could help them and I could help me. So I could sell them enough lipstick, I could get free for me. So I mean, I've always been, all these seeds of what I'm doing now have always been there. It mm-hmm. just took the job layoff for me to have the purpose to say, okay, I'm going to stop. I'm going to go back and look, what am I uniquely equipped to do? And then how can I use that to help people?
Yes. Yes. I often talk about the four things that make you freaking awesome, and from my book, From Frustrated to Freaking Awesome. So everything's freaking awesome, right? And those four things are all of your life experiences, both the good and the bad. Because like I said, life happens for you, not to you. It's also your education, but that's your formal education and your informal education. You know, what have you learned from books? What have you learned from conferences? What have you learned from, you know, all of those other things? And a little bit, your Avon experience is education and life experience, right? And then it's, you know, what are your values? What's really important to you? And I think so often people think that your values are what they are and they don't grow and evolve and change. But as you experienced, you know, your 23-year-old self didn't realize what your 35-year-old self with two, you know, married and two kids was going to view as really, really important. And so kind of taking regular stock in, you know, is this still really important to me? And if it's not, and if it's shifted and grown or changed, that it's okay for those things to change. You know, if your values shift, it doesn't mean that you're a bad person, right? And then lastly, your StrengthsFinder profile is, you know, the other thing that from my standpoint anyway, I walk all of my clients through and really help them to see, you know, this is your natural innate wired gifts. And like you said, you saw some of those roots at age four. I know I did too. And those grow into what your natural superpowers are. And, you know, so often we forget that we can really dive down and go, what actually makes me not just one in a million, but one that has never walked the earth before, never will walk the earth ever again, that you are truly unique, and to be able to stand up and stand proud in that, and then to gather the people around you. So speaking of gathering people around you, I'm curious how you continue to build your team, because it's one thing to have one employee or one partner. And then it's a whole nother thing when the team gets bigger than you can keep all of your fingers in. So how did you manage that growth?
Oh, good question. And amen to StrengthsFinders. It's a big believer in it. We have it outside of everybody's offices here. Awesome. So we're all about it. So, you know, I think about this because I think part of, and I listen to a lot of entrepreneur story and I'm friends with a lot of entrepreneurs. And I think everyone would say that there's some luck, some piece of it that, gosh, I didn't anticipate at this moment how great this would turn out. And, you know, for me, I had these great people around me and I was doing everything by myself. And we, about 2 years in, got a pretty significant contract that I needed to hire pretty quickly to be able to fulfill that. And I knew that part of what I needed was operations and stability. And part of what I needed was some more, you know, journalists in here, former journalists in here. And I was very lucky early on to find kind of the yin to my yang. Mm. And it was, you know, I think about now the hiring process we go through and how difficult it is even for an entry-level person to get hired. And I went out with a friend of mine's husband who was, you know, in the middle of a kind of career, thinking about different careers. And we went to coffee and I offered him a job and he's our COO. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it was, and I think the reason that some of the folks early on came around me, first of all, I needed help. I knew I couldn't do it on my own. And I was committed to fulfilling this contract. And I believed that based on what had happened through that process is that I was really onto something and people were willing to pay for it. And I had an obligation to see how far that could go. And I did a lot of development on myself. And, you know, at the beginning of the process, I went after friends of mine, people who believed in me, because I didn't have a proven process yet. I had a dream and a concept and a passion and someone who was willing to pay for it. I didn't have 10 years of fantastic case studies to show anyone. So I found these people who believed in me. And then there's an obligation to prove them right.
That's
people
right.
People who left jobs, people who are supporting their families. So that was kind of the initial group. And most of those people are still here. And then, you know, folks that have joined us afterwards, or since recently, you know, they're joining something that's stable and we have, you know, there's still lots of work to do and we're still evolving and all those things, but the foundation has been built and it's kind of a different, I need people now to believe in the vision of the company. At the beginning, people needed to believe in me.
In you.
And those are two different, not types of people, but two different relationships. I'm not tapping into my personal network anymore. In fact, you know, that's not actually good to have too many of your tight people around you. But, you know, 2 years ago, I took my husband to dinner and offered him a job and he works at the company now. So I do have some of those tight people around and I've been really fortunate that the right people have come at the right times. And I believe deeply in my faith and the fact that this business started in a church has been an anchoring factor for me because this wasn't initially my dream. It was given to me and I have to prove it out and see what can happen with it.
Yeah. I always tell, especially beginning entrepreneurs who tend to be really frustrated, right? Yeah. That your dreams weren't put inside you to torture you. They were put inside you to drive you and to help you back up when you fall on your knees, not if you fall and scrape your knees, but when you do. And, you know, it convincing some people that their dreams weren't put inside them to torture them is sometimes difficult if they're really in the muck of it all. But it's so true. Our dreams are literally installed in us. Whatever your faith base is, like we don't just come up with these things all on our own. They are placed inside of us. At least that's what I firmly believe. So I'm with you, Christy, on that one.
And you know, entrepreneurs have to do their dream. Mm-hmm. Having a dream is one thing, but it's not real until you do it.
That's
and
right.
It's a verb. Do the dream. Don't just have a dream. Don't just tell other people about your dream, but do your dream and then see what happens.
Yeah. So good. So if there's one piece of advice that you think that would really be helpful for someone who is, let's say you back in 2013, 2014, or somewhere in there where they're wanting to get to the list. They're wanting to be one of those companies that is not just growing fast, but growing fast and well with all of the lug nuts on the wheels without the tires flying off. What piece of advice do you think they need to hear right now?
A lot of folks talk about culture and how critical culture is. And culture to me, it was very early in the process that was critical. Because I mentioned my non-negotiables, I wanted to build a place where families could come first. And we have all these kind of, you know, policies that at the time were crazy. More companies are doing these things, so maybe they're less crazy. But, you know, a parent transitioning back to work, they bring their baby to work here. So we have babies around and we have all these different things. I think that valuing people is so critical. And I run into entrepreneurs who, you know, people disappoint. And I'm not going to say they won't because I've been disappointed. And yet, we have to believe that our greatest asset is the people around us. And I can't serve my clients well if the people around here and the Media Mindfield team isn't feeling supported and feeling trained and feeling cared for. And that's really important. So I think on paper, if you look at just numbers, it's hard to make a case for I'm going to invest time and energy and go the extra mile for people because it's the right thing to do, not because it's going to hit my bottom line, but because it's the right thing to do and it will come back to the bottom line. And I think the other thing that I would tell folks is when I looked at people in my position or people on the Inc. 5000 list, which was like a ridiculous concept to me years ago, even to think about it, I thought they had it all together and they knew what they were doing. And I think every entrepreneur, if they're honest, will tell you day to day, they don't know what they're doing and they're trusting their gut and surrounding themselves with the right people and go into the next day. And I think we need more vulnerability and honesty about some of the struggles and some of the difficult times, because the kind of person I was to start the company and the kind of person to run the company and the kind of person that if it gets too big to be able to realize that, you know, for the sake of the company and the people here, maybe someone else should run it. Those are all different kinds of people. And my goal is to stay honest enough with myself and to have people around me who are honest enough with me so that I can continue to evolve with the company so I can shepherd it in the way that it deserves to be shepherded.
Yeah. And thank you for saying that too, because it's not enough to know what you want or what you want your business to be. And it's not enough to know how to do those things or what you need to do. It's also who do you need to become in order to have a business like that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you really do have to do that self-work. You know, as a business coach, I'm always talking to people almost equally as much and sometimes more about their self-development and who they're becoming, not just the strategy. The strategy is sometimes the easy part. It's the personal work that's really, really tough. Man, we could get into a whole nother part two of this when it comes to culture. But just really quickly, before we wrap up here, how did you decide what kind of culture that you wanted? You probably decided that on your own as you went into it with some of your non-negotiables, but it's evolved over time. And it sounds like you've been really intentional about building your culture. And the truth is that your culture will happen whether you intentionally create it or not. So it's just a matter of what will that culture look like if you let it create itself. So as you've evolved your culture, who have you included in that conversation to continue to grow it?
Sure. So at the very beginning, it was about, I want to create a work environment that I would actually want to work at. And now I realize years later, my kids are older, that I need to create a work environment and continue to make sure Media Mindfield is a work environment that people I want to hire want to work at. Mm-hmm. It's a different twist on that. And it really does matter. And yet there's a right way to treat people. You know, I want to treat people the way I would want to be treated. And so we try and work our policies around that. And when it comes to culture, I want to reward people for doing great work and having fun. And we celebrate a lot of things. So for example, you know, I'm a question everything. And then just because the world is doing it one way, why do we think corporate America has it figured out? Why do we just believe that this is how it should be done? What if there's a better way? So I am questioning a lot of things. So, you know, everyone here gets their birthdays off. I don't want them to have their cake at work. I want them to be having their cake with their friends and family or taking a nap or whatever they want to do. And we celebrate people's work anniversaries. So we have a treat and they get a cape and there's a whole thing, but I just want to think about things in a different way and ask people constantly, how do you want to be treated at work and those types of things. But now we have made the extra step in the last 3 months. We have someone on the executive team who's the executive director of people and development, and her job is totally focused on the people and making sure that everyone has a development track and that we're hiring the right people. And by right, I don't mean the right kind of people. I mean, right fit for us and right fit for them, because it is a two-way street. So culture for us is critical, and it's about ensuring that we have the right kind of people who can really thrive in this kind of environment.
So good. Oh my gosh. I could talk to you all afternoon. You have so many gems to drop. Christy, where can people find you? Where can they find Media Mindfield?
Sure. Media Mindfield is media-mindfield.com. And I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I'm all over.
Awesome. Awesome. We'll make sure all of your links are in the show notes page as well. Thank you so, so much for taking the time. This was such a valuable conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Making the List with Alyssa Dare Nelson. If you're loving the podcast, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and review. Until the next episode, aim high and play to your strengths.